broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
We have recovered 11 victims. We have recovered 10 bodies.
Well, I don't know why we drive by New York 23, Andrea. I think that is probably
sad. We really wanted to win, but we got 47% of the vote. You know, we're not a state like California with a...
I've used the N-word most of my life.
Dang!
You son of a bitch.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a trip through the looking glass of media, talk radio, broadcasting, the Alice in Wonderland of radio shows.
Got a letter about that, too.
What do you mean we got a letter about that?
Well, you call yourself Alice.
Yeah, they didn't like that. I'm not calling myself Alice. I'm saying the show is Alice in Wonderland.
Well, some people are not understanding.
I ain't saying I'm Alice, okay? Got a letter about it. Anyway, welcome to the program. 877-876 is our number. And also, you can Twitter with us at twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show. That's the official Twitter page of our staff here at the Phil Hendry Show. Bud and Rance and Rodriguez and, of course, Robert, they're on there throughout the show. So if you want to comment on what's happening on a radio show, you can do that over there at twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show, and visit our website, philhendryshow.com. Right now, we are streaming live audio of the show and live video of the show, so you can watch it. And we're going to bring on the line here Herb Sewell. Now, Herb, you know the nature of this material. We've had Mr. Sewell on our show before, and it is just coincidence, by the way, folks, that his name is Sewell, and this man's soul in Cleveland has been arrested for this crime.
Mockery of that.
No, I don't. I'm pointing that out to them as well. The man's name is Sewell. You are Herb Sewell, but nonetheless...
And I believe this gentleman is African-American, is that right?
Yes, he's an African-American. His victims apparently are African-American women. They have discovered some 11 bodies now. And this looks like a classic serial killer situation. This guy looked like a psychopath. Did you see him?
I saw pictures of him, yes. There's no question. I spent 8 years at Atascadero, as you pointed out to your audience. I got to know some very notorious serial murderers. Walter Bellhaven, of course, Randall Toomey. Randall Toomey was more a spree killer. Randall Toomey was a mass murderer, but what they call today a spree killer. That is, an individual who kills a great many people at once. Of course, in Randall Toomey's case, it was his family. It's quite gruesome crime.
All right, well, let's not get into those cases, because I want to focus most on this one. And I want people to understand that you were incarcerated at one time for vicious crimes to the point where you were hospitalized, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And during your hospitalization, you underwent shock therapy?
Electroshock as well as insulin shock, a variety of biochemical manipulation and so forth. No, Dr. Suffolk up there. And in point of fact, Phil, your audience should know that I had reached a point in my incarceration, where I was trusted enough to assist the doctors in some of their evaluations, some of the paperwork and so forth, and evaluating patients. So I did, by the time I was released, I did have a modicum of trust vested in me by the staff there. Of course, now I am on probation.
And you're living at a halfway house?
I am not really at liberty to say where I live for a variety of reasons, around personal security being one of them, as well as individuals that I'm working for.
All right. Let's talk about this crime, Herb. This is something that we've become more and more familiar with. And you've heard Dr. Michael Stone on our show talking about how he feels that serial killers are becoming more and more prevalent. Whether this has to do with the genetic pool becoming bigger and bigger, and there's more of them out there in the gene pool. But here is a man who was living in this home. I don't know whether he was owning it or renting it. And apparently, allegedly, killing these women after raping them, strangling them. Obviously, they're dead. I don't know what he did with the bodies afterwards, but it's not unusual for a serial killer who's psychopathic and who's sadistic to manipulate these bodies as trophies. Is that right?
Well, from what I read, about this particular individual. There was a skull found in the garage in a bucket.
Yeah, I've read that.
And that is not unusual. Walter Bellhaven, who I got to know at Tascadero, Walter is a individual. I talked quite a bit with Walter. You know, there's a big court fight between his wife, Bonnie Bellhaven, and the Oakland District Attorney's Office as to the right of ownership of a particular human skull that Bonnie Bellhaven had in her possession at the house. Now, the district attorney there in Alameda County was not able to determine that this skull belonged to anyone. And as such, Walter, through his wife Bunny, argued that it was his possession.
I don't want to hear the details of that, but why would this man have a human skull?
Well, I'm speculating. Walter, of course, you know, being incarcerated in Atascadero, I'm quite sure. There's no question that he was responsible for the murders of a number of people. I just don't know whether this skull was one of his victims, something that was given to him. The Alameda County DA was quite sure that it must belong to someone, and obviously it does. But they didn't have any real proof. So Bunny Bellhaven was able to retain the skull.
Bunny Bellhaven is who? Walter's wife?
Walter's wife, yes.
Nonetheless, is this not unusual for serial killers? It's not, is it?
No, it's no. The taking of trophies is quite common among some serial killers. Some might take a physical trophy. Others will, of course, take photographs. And it's quite gruesome. There's no question about it. Now, there is one aspect to this that I wanted to point out to you and to your listeners. There is something called macromorbidity. And I don't know if any of your listeners are aware of it. Are you aware of that, Phil?
Macromorbidity. I've never heard of it, no.
It is a psychological state that exists in people who are so lacking in self-esteem, so utterly lacking in self-esteem, and so utterly lacking in any feeling that they can influence life around them, that they feel the only way they can influence life is after they die. And now, I don't for one moment think that this is the case. I don't know for sure, but I don't think for one moment this is the case of the young women who died at this man's house. However, we now know that there are some people who either kill themselves or allow themselves to be killed in such a way so as to have their body decompose and literally begin to smell, and this is their way of hating the world or getting back at the world. They weren't able to do it in life, so they do it in death.
Now, wait a minute. Are you telling me that people die on purpose?
It's a kind of a suicide, yes. It could be suicide by a murderer, so you're having someone kill you. But they manipulate their own death so that they will be buried, and then they'll begin to stink or rot and then stink. And that's what happened at this house. If you read the story...
Wait. You're saying that this doesn't necessarily have to do with the women that died in Cleveland.
No, it didn't. But I was struck by the fact that for months, literally months, people were calling the health department, the Cuyahoga County Health Department, saying, "Why, it stinks to high heaven out here. Send someone out here to clean the stench out." And, of course, they never did. Although they did get some poor sod to clean out his super system, someone out of the sausage factory, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the story was, yes, the smell of decomposing flesh. People didn't know what it was. Somebody thought they smelled dead bodies, but yes, they did tell a sausage plant they thought it was you guys. They thought it was them, and those guys wound up cleaning their vents and cleaning their sewage system, all kinds of stuff, and it still didn't help. But I want to get back to this thing that you're talking about, this macromorbidity. How can somebody manipulate their own death to the extent that they are undiscovered for a certain amount of time so that they decay and smell? First of all, that sounds almost as crazy as the guy that would commit a crime like this.
Well, I don't know if macromorbidity is something that individuals practice. I don't know if you go out looking for a serial killer, you understand what I'm saying? There are people, for instance, who will commit suicide in an open field that is downwind of a major place where people live, like a strip ball or a place like that. So the body lays there, starts to stink, and that person gets what they want after life. because they felt so trod on by life, they felt so insulted by life, they felt so put upon by life. There were times in my life, by dealings with mother and all of the Tascadero, I would gladly have died and lay rotting in the noonday sun just so it would stink it up. Now, this is...
Well, but how does somebody do that? How does someone manipulate their own death to the point where they're undiscovered long enough for their body to rot and smell? I mean, this is a gruesome conversation, but I did warn our listeners at the top of the hour.
Oh, it's very gruesome, very gruesome.
Well, how does somebody do that?
Well, like I said, in some instances, it's suicide. In another instance, you may be someone who knows you want to get murdered, and you know that you're dealing with a psychopath, and somehow, I want him to kill me over here near the school, or not the school, but say the mall or the shopping mall, or maybe he can kill me next to this restaurant so that when I lay there, for instance, there was a story of a busboy, and this was in Denver, Colorado, a young man by the name of Agaluta. You know this name, Agaluta?
No, I don't.
This young busboy befriended a man he knew was a psychopath and manipulated this man into killing him, not 100 yards from where he worked as a busboy in this Chinese restaurant. And for 3 weeks after, the restaurant cleared out because of the stink, they couldn't take it. Well, it turns out that that's exactly what this kid wanted, because he had told some friends, watch, I'm going to turn up in a lot about 100 yards from the restaurant, and it'll clear the place out. It'll be that flavorful and that fragrant. And sure enough, it happened.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not.
So the kid gets himself killed, and he knows that he isn't going to be discovered.
Wasn't discovered for like a week or so. Just enough to get real, start to smell.
Oh, God, this is a vile, vile discussion.
Well, the reason why I bring this up, and forgive me, I'm not saying that all of these women would do this who were found in this guy's house, but what if there was one or two of them, and maybe he wasn't guilty of all the murders?
Well, he still killed them.
All right, he still killed them, but maybe they knew they were going to die, and they wanted to stink that whole neighborhood up. Take a look at that neighborhood. It's not the best neighborhood in the world. They probably got abused. Probably a lot of those women were not treated very well. And they knew they weren't going anywhere in life, and they knew that their lives wouldn't amount to anything. What better way to tell the whole world to just go to you-know-where than to get yourself killed in that neighborhood and to smell the place up for 6 months, get a restaurant closed down here, get a sausage factory to spend more money on some sanitation equipment over there, and generally upset the whole neighborhood.
And they manipulate this in their life thinking, that's what I'll do. I'll get myself killed in this neighborhood.
Yeah, and then the smell, I'll show them,
I'll show them.
Yeah, it sounds very strange, but that kind of thing does happen.
All right, we're talking with Herb Sewell here about the coroner's office identifying bodies here in this Cleveland house in Cuyahoga County coroner's office. Pretty weird. 50-year-old guy by the name of Sewell. I don't know this guy's first name because, who needs it? 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-PHIL as we talk to Herb Sewell here about this horrible, what seems to be, serial murderer who's been caught by the Cleveland authorities and the bodies of these women found at his house. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
On the line with me is Herb Sewell, and Herb is often a contributor on our program on matters concerning crime. He's also a man who's done time for serious crimes, and to that end was in a forensic hospital in Tascadero, California. And you were there for how many years, Herb?
I was there for 8 years. 8 years. I like to make the joke, they make they kept me 4 years trying to get through to me and 4 more years keeping me locked up. And of course, people who've seen the film Halloween, they know.
You realize the way you talk, there's a lot of people that find you scary.
Well, I understand people find me scary, but I can assure you, there's nothing. I'm harmless. I'm harmless as far as anybody could be harmless. I don't think anyone in life is harmless if you push them the wrong way. I dare say even a a little tiny baby, if you push the kid, there's danger.
What do you mean, a little tiny baby? What do you mean?
The point I'm making is everyone's dangerous if you push them.
And what's a baby going to do?
Well, I don't mean a baby, but a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old. Push them, get in their face, and anything that's handy. Anything. I mean, it can be a butter knife. It could be a plastic fork from one of those picnic packs. And they'll go for one of your eyes. Don't worry about it. And
what are you talking about, man? A 3-year-old? A little 3-year-old kid?
The point I'm making is that everyone is potentially... Are you going to go right up to a little 3-year-old baby who's holding a fork and say, bad, or, you know, whatever you... I don't know how you piss a baby off.
Well, all right, let's say you say you don't get to have TV.
Okay, go right up to a 3-year-old baby who's holding a plastic fork in his tiny little pink fist, and say, you don't get to watch TV tonight. You don't think that child, in a moment, if he doesn't have the right kind of biochemistry, if that child is not perfectly healthy, you don't think that child won't take that fork and stick it right into your eye? Think again, friend.
Well, you know, I've heard about children. You know, when we talk to Dr. Stone.
But before you say that, I wanted to ask, could you just comment on that?
Comment on what?
Would you go up to a little baby holding a fork in his bit, go up to his face and say, you don't get to watch TV tonight?
I would not go up to that child and say that.
No, not because you're a nice guy.
No, not because I'm a nice guy. Any baby, any infant, any child who's holding something like that doesn't know what it is. They don't know the danger of the thing they're holding.
Oh, that's how you make yourself feel good about it, huh?
What do you mean, is that how I make myself feel good about it?
Well, you don't want to attribute anything evil to a child. So you say, oh, well, he doesn't know what that's for and that it's going to hurt people.
Often, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, that a baby, an infant, is holding a fork, may not know that it's going to hurt people and could lunge with it.
That's what I'm saying. You're making yourself feel better because you don't want to contemplate the possibility that a 3-year-old infant can have a biochemical imbalance so profound, so utterly profound and so distorted that even at the age of 3 years, which would be 36 months, that infant is capable of taking one of your eyeballs out of your head and rolling it around on his little dinner tray. You don't think that's possible?
Herb, if you're talking about children that are psychopathic...
No, let's just stick to the reality. Do you think it's possible?
If you're talking about the possibility that there are children that age that have a chemical imbalance, yes, I think you're right.
Well, when you say chemical imbalance, it sounds so scientific and antiseptic. I'm just talking about the, if you will, the gothic... reality of an infant in his little, what do you call those things they sit in? What is it called?
What, the high chair?
In his high chair. And he takes a fork and he looks at this man who just told him that he doesn't get to watch his cartoons. And he says, well, then I've got nothing to lose. Zap, right into your eyeball goes the fork.
What infant thinks that way?
I beg your pardon?
What infant thinks that way?
I don't know what infant thinks that way, but I'm not taking any chances. You know, I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make to you.
So you go through life believing that every single human being, no matter who, no matter what, is potentially a violent, injurious, and hateful thing.
I'm not saying hateful, because again, the psychopath has no emotions. If you take a psychopathic baby, a 3-year-old, a psychopath, no emotions, he just sees this big, ugly face that's telling him he doesn't get to watch cartoons. What is the logical thing that a psychopathic baby is going to think? Well, I think what I'll do is shove this fork right through his skull. That's what a logical...
You're attributing to infants adult human emotion, and I don't know that you can do that. Okay? I don't...
Didn't you hear Dr. Stone say that psychopathic children are made... that psychopaths are made very early?
I heard him say that. I've read the literature on it. I've read where there are children who have been known to take dogs and flush them down... little puppies and kittens and flush them down toilets, and they think that maybe those children have no actual feeling for living things.
Yes, exactly. There was a case of the child that flushed the kitten down the toilet, and when they got mad at her, she cried because she wanted to flush the kitten, and they wouldn't let her.
Yes, that, they say, was an indication of a very sick kid. But I've never heard of a 3-year-old sitting in a high chair getting, not angry.
No, not angry. That's the logical thing. I don't get to watch cartoons. The face that told me I can't watch cartoons, it's going to have a fork buried in it, you see. And
well, that's weird, man. That is.
Oh well, man. You know, Phil, you had me on your program.
All right, just hang on the line here, Herb Sewell, 877-876-PHIL, talking about crime and this guy in Cleveland. With Herb Sewell, the Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry,
877-876-PHIL.
Commercial? Yes.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
On the line with me is Herb Sewell. Mr. Sewell, a commentator and a contributor on our program when we talk about criminal stories, events, criminal events. Certainly the story in Cleveland qualifies. The serial killer alleged, this man, Anthony Sewell, who is alleged to have killed 11 women now, Herb, and disposed of their bodies in various places around the house. It's very gruesome because this guy had bodies upstairs. He had bodies buried. What do you make of a guy like this as opposed to a... Well, you mentioned Walter Belhaven, who you were in Atascadero with. That guy was very careful.
Well, Walter, and I say this, please understand that I'm not saying this out of admiration. I'm saying Walter was very creative in the way that he disposed of his victims, and I won't go into detail, but we can say that he used the Postal Service. He used overnight delivery. There were a couple of times that he used a candygram.
What do you mean candygram?
In disposing of the victims.
In disposing of the victims, he used candygram.
Well, I don't want to get into detail, but candygram delivers. Only he would have candygram go to a house that no one was living in and say to them, "We'll just drop the package off then." And then the package would sit there for months sometimes because they'd be abandoned homes. So Walter was very creative. That's the point that I'm trying to make. But
good Lord. Candygram and what else?
Well, he used overnight delivery. He used the Postal Service. He used cars that go to the airport. And he said, "We're not picking anybody up. It's just a box that I want dropped off at the airport." And things like that. And it was very creative, and I, like I said, I don't want to be in a position where I admire a serial murderer, but you've got to hand it to him. There was a light touch, there was a sense of humor.
No, I'm sorry, I don't see that.
Well, but like I'm saying, if you look at a kid objectively...
It's impossible to look at something like that objectively. I can't look at that objectively and say, well, isn't he... What do you mean a light touch?
Well, I'm saying that if you're going to be a mass murderer, the least you can do is throw a little sense of humor into it. And
there's nothing funny about it, Herb, at all.
No, I know that. I know there's nothing funny about it. I know that. I know, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry. There is nothing funny about it. You're right.
Is that something you have to remind yourself of?
No, I don't have to remind myself. I have to remind the company. I remember the company that I'm in.
So if you're just sitting around with other guys who maybe think the same way you do, you guys sit around and chuckle about how Walter used to send body parts by way of overnight delivery and candygram?
No, not necessarily. I suppose there was a time when I would laugh about it. If I think back on it now, no, you're right, it's not funny.
All right, I want to talk, but the point is that this guy, this serial killer in Cleveland, was very disorganized, right? This is what they call a disorganized killer?
Well, there are different kinds of serial murderers. Some are called organized, some are called disorganized, and there's a lot of other subcategories. The organized serial killer was, I'll give you an example of the organized serial killer, was John Wayne Gacy. John Wayne Gacy had a crawl space under his house. He had it all mapped out as to where he wanted to leave the bodies. Now, he wasn't very smart, because no serial killer, no psychopath, is all that good at planning for the future. It's been said that psychopaths the least talent they have is knowing what to do if things go wrong. And something always goes wrong with a psychopath, a sadistic psychopathic killer. So, but John Wayne Gacy was organized. He buried the bodies under the house. He had a trap door that he would take them down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On and on we go. Now you take this man's soul, if indeed he is the perpetrator, and at this particular point I'm sure the police have no doubt, but we have to say that allegedly, so I'll say allegedly so you don't get sued by whatever he's related to that they want to sue you. This man is a disorganized. That is that they are so out of touch with reality they are just putting the bodies anywhere, killing and leaving them there, almost like carrion, almost like they're buzzards that find something to eat and then just drop the meat there or right on the street.
Well, wouldn't that indicate, if he's, you say, out of touch reality, that he's psychotic?
He may be. There may be some psychosis. There might be some schizophrenia, which in which case, you know, you're going to rob the people of the state of Ohio of a good time, because that guy is probably going to be put into some kind of a forensic facility. God knows how long.
Well, what do you mean, robbing the people of Ohio of a good time? So they won't put this guy to death, is what you're saying.
Well, I think the only thing to do with a psychopath is to put him to death. I love Walter Belhaven. He's a very good friend of mine. But I don't think he should live. I don't think Walter should be drawing another breath, even as you and I are talking right now. As much as I love and respect that man, I don't think he should be drawing another breath as he sits up there. And I know he may hear about this, and he may have words for me when we talk next, but I haven't. He knows it.
So this guy, Walter Belhaven, you befriended this man when you were in Atascadero, this serial killer.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes, absolutely.
You mentioned to me that he's an affable man.
Very affable. I told you he gives botanical lectures. He's a great card player. Loves basketball. Loves basketball. Loves the Denver Nuggets. And I never did. I couldn't feature that, but loves the Denver Nuggets. Loves horse racing. But he's a psychopathic murderer. And I don't think he, as you and I are speaking right now, every breath that Walter Belhaven is drawing is cold-blooded thievery. It's highway robbery of the oxygen supply of the earth. I love him like a brother, but every breath he takes is highway robbery of the oxygen supply of the earth. There's no green crime being committed today. And if Al Gore wants to do the planet Earth a real favor, he'd go to Atascadero and green up Walter Belhaven.
Meaning make sure he's put to death.
That's right. It won't happen in the state of California, because here in the state of California, they feel that a psychopathic killer is more valuable than the victim who's been murdered. That is to say, the victim is dead, but the psychopath stays alive. Feature that. I can't figure it for the life of me.
All right, Herb, well, at least you're being very, very honest about that one. But some of these comments you make, you know, where you have a touch of whimsy and...
Well, again, there's a creativity to it.
Yeah. Now, this guy's soul, you talked about being disorganized, and you said it's possible he's a psychopath, psychotic. But looking at that man's face, he looks psychopathic. What is a disorganized psychopathic killer who isn't sick, is just a psychopath?
Well, a disorganized psychopath is much like the organized psychopath. They're both egotistical. And that means that they both believe that they have every right in the world to take a human being's life so that they are enriched by that experience. Now, the organized psychopath perhaps is more realistic in that he does try to conceal the crime. The disorganized psychopath is so full of this mania, this megalomania, that he can kill someone and just leave them laying there in the street. Such was the case, of course, with David Lee Parker. David Lee Parker would kill people in, for instance, coffee shops. Just at the right moment, when no one was looking, he would stab them or otherwise kill them and just leave them sitting there in the booth, and he'd go over and read a magazine, because he wanted to see if anybody would discover the dead body. And then he'd get up and walk as slowly as he could out of the restaurant, leaving the victim there. And he did this in coffee shops and movie theaters.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not.
This guy would kill people in coffee shops and leave them in the booth.
Leave them right there in the booth. And leave the restaurant as slow as he could, just to see if anybody noticed. So, and that's what he would do, waiting at a crosswalk, waiting in a crowd of people. He'd stick somebody, kill them right there on a street corner and leave them there. And when people screamed and said, "Oh my God, what happened? Did you see the guy?" No, I didn't.
Boy, that's megalomania, isn't it?
That is absolute megalomania, and that's what the psychopath is all about. And I can tell you, I don't want to say, but a lot of them are very creative.
Yeah. Well, listen, Herb, it's always good talking to you, although it's pretty gruesome talking about some of this stuff. And although they did catch this guy. And the other thing that, you know, I talked to Dr. Stone about, and with you too, is the fact that police technique, forensics, so forth, police, the investigation process that police go through is getting better and better and better. It's difficult for these people to get away with it anymore, isn't it?
Well, I don't think any of them get away with it, but I think what's heartening is that these serial killers wind up only killing one guy, you know. But you know they're a serial killer. You know they're a psychopath. But they only get one guy, like the guy who killed that guy in the apartment in New York. Well, that guy was probably on his way to killing a half a dozen people. But police were able to get this man because of the, as you say, the forensic technique that they use, DNA and so forth. So nowadays we have potential serial killers who are caught after only the other guy, the Craigslist guy.
That's another example.
Yeah, that guy was probably on his way to wasting, I don't know how many women, excuse me for saying wasting, but it's a habit. But he was caught after one or two, and now he is going to spend the rest of his life, hopefully, a very short life, behind bars.
All right, Herb Sewell with us. Herb, continued success with your rehabilitation, okay?
I appreciate that very much.
Herb Sewell, who is... right now on probation from a forensic hospital himself, talking about this murder, this series of murders in Cleveland, all pointing to one man, Anthony Sowell, because the bodies were all found at his house. Whether this is a home he owns or rents, I don't know. The house, however, had in it some bodies. The backyard, some of the bodies were buried. There was a skull found in a bucket. I mean, it has all the earmarks of a classic sadistic serial killer, and we'll follow the case for you and find out what else. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Back with more news and the stories we couldn't get to right after this.
Phil Hendry.
We're going to get to the stories we couldn't get to, but we're going to get to a story that we can get to right now, only because it's this story keeps cycling around. There's a Rhode Island hospital that's messing up on their surgeries. I mean, there was one last month, I think we reported on, Bud, where, what was that?
Yeah, a guy didn't have a hand or something, or they operated on his hand, it was supposed to be his heart.
Yeah, they took off his hand.
No, they didn't take off his hand. What they did was they screwed up somehow going in to do heart surgery, and they were supposed to take a vein from a part of the body.
The guy woke up with no hand or something.
Yeah.
No, he didn't wake up with no hand. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's it, but nonetheless.
I'm pretty sure he woke up, he's like missing a leg or...
He wasn't missing a... Hold on for a minute. This was a Rhode Island hospital. It's been fined for its fifth surgery error in 2 years. Now... far be it from me to proclaim the obvious, all right? And I don't want to hit this too hard, but how can you possibly sit anywhere in the world and comment on American healthcare and scream and yell about Obamacare and all this stuff and then say the system we got is, like, good? Or maybe this is all I can say is that some people probably think the system we have is just fine. Look, if there's some hospitals are going to screw up and other hospitals are, you know, not going to screw up. Okay. Well, if they screw up, do I get to sue, or is that like what you call frivolous litigation? What are we talking about here? Well, these doctors are ordering all these tests because they're afraid of being sued. Now, you know, it's funny because I always thought that doctors ordered tests because they felt they were necessary. Now, either a doctor doesn't know what he's doing or he does. Either a doctor is doing the right thing or he isn't. And if he's doing the right thing, okay, then yes, I believe that there should be some sort of a cap or some kind of instruction to the courts or some law or something that protects them to say, this man did everything that he could. And you want to know something? Because he didn't order 58,000 other tests, you could take it and shove it up your you-know-what. How about that, Daisy? Okay? Well, he should have, could have, would have, you know. However, by the same token, if I go in to have my tonsils removed and the guy takes one of my legs off, well, I think I ought to sue. Now, not that we're trying to make an issue out of this, but this can't possibly be anything anybody's proud of.
Well, do you think it's going to happen any better with Obamacare?
I don't know. You're right. I don't know. I don't know if it'll improve at all. But you can't be arguing in favor of a system of health care in this country where a hospital is fined for the fifth time in 2 years because they don't know whether they're coming or going when it comes to surgery, for crying out loud. Few people could argue with the notion that hospital operations performed on the wrong body part are events that should never happen, but at one hospital, it's happened five times. Rhode Island Hospital in Providence has been fined $150,000 by the Rhode Island Department of Health after a surgeon operated on the wrong finger of a patient last month. Among the ramifications, the hospital will have to install video cameras in all of its operating rooms, and all of its surgeries will have to be watched by a clinical professional. Not on the surgical team trained in surgical safety measures. You can't trust the doctor to know what he's doing. You got to have a guy sitting there saying, wait a minute, Harry, that's not the brain. Well, what it was just...
All right, you have the wrong...
Well, whatever you want.
It's the brain, man, not the... What are you doing?
Oh, that's his testicles, the brain.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, I'm making a joke, but it ain't funny to the guy that woke up with his... finger operated on. God knows what they did. On Fox News with Martha McCollum, Dr. John Macri of Johns Hopkins University calls the hospital's repeated mistakes embarrassing. Well, do you think?
Yeah, you know, if you're the sort of guy that loses your keys a lot, don't go into surgery. You know, we're all human, but there are standard checklists that you're supposed to go through, and we have a checklist for every operation that confirms the operation and the person, but yet only a few percent of doctors will go through a standard surgical checklist. And now hospitals are getting a wake-up call because, quite frankly, Martha, this is outrageous, and it's an embarrassment to the surgical community. As you know, I'm a surgeon. I operate every day. This is an embarrassment. Well,
do you think?
I'll be honest with you, Martha. You know, I've had an operating room schedule where it says left hernia, left breast, right colon, and you can get confused. That's why we need to use standardized checks and balances in our day, the same way the aviation industry does it, and the same way that Ford Motor Company or Toyota does it. You know, we have the greatest healthcare system in the world. Things like this continue to happen at a rate where doctors are killing more people every year than car accidents and HIV combined.
Wait a second. And this guy's saying we got the best health care in the world, but doctors are killing more people every year than car accidents and HIV combined. Do you think we can improve on that record? Is it possible? Are people saying it's impossible? Is that what they're saying? Because what they want to do, this is what's going to wind up happening. People are so dead set against any kind of health care reform per se, that means Barack Obama, that they're going to put into place a health care reform system that's probably even more cumbersome and more bureaucratic than the one that he's proposing. If you're going to have guys, checks and balances like the aviation industry, and the aviation industry's got something called the FAA, man. You know what that is, don't you? The FAA, in other words, the FAA and the NTSB, they got their noses up the rear ends of every airline company in the world, every aircraft, every pilot, every co-pilot, every navigator, every flight attendant. And you can't make a move without those guys checking off on it. You're suggesting that? You know, a federal agency like the FCC or the FAA, the NTSB, or what have you, the SEC, that checks on whether doctors know which body part they're operating on. I'm in favor of that. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
All right. Time now for our stories that we couldn't get to. Thank goodness, thank goodness, thank goodness. Where are the stories we didn't get to, bud? Over there. GOP county chair, a victim of a fake Twitter account. In a case being called Twittergate, a Republican Party county chairman wants to know whether state party leaders know about a fake Twitter account set up to defame him. Brevard County GOP Chairman Jason Steele said the account uses his name and photo and sends tweets that hurt his character. One read, "Is 10:30 too early to make a drink? Steele is recovering from alcoholism." Police traced the account to Republican Party Field Operations Director Tim Nungesser. Steele said, "I'm sick to my stomach over it. If they're doing it to me, who else are they doing it to?" He traced it to his own party, man. Nungesser was fired. The account appeared after Steele criticized the party leaders for favoring Governor Charlie Crist in the Senate primary instead of staying neutral. In Concord, New Hampshire, the bouncing mega meatball record has landed in the East Coast. Matthew Mitnitsky, owner of Nani's Italian Eatery in Concord, said Sunday that a 222.5-pound meatball was authenticated as the world's largest after being weighed by state weights and measures officials. A Guinness Book of World Records official confirmed the big meatball as a record breaker and presented Mitnitsky with a plaque. The old record of 198 pounds was set just over a month ago after Los Angeles-based talk show host Jimmy Kimmel vowed to beat a record set in Mexico. That record, 109 pounds, was set in August. Kimmel said those specs aren't going to... No, he didn't say that. Mitnitsky said he got involved to bring the meatball back to the East Coast because that's where it originated. Wasn't Italy, huh?
No, I think it was the East Coast.
Okay. A Lincoln, Nebraska cook gave a would-be robber a taste of carne asada, but the knife-wielding thief may not be back for seconds. The thief pulled a knife on one of the restaurant's cook's co-workers, held it to her throat, and demanded money, according to police. The quick-thinking cook flung the still-cooking flank steak at the would-be robber, hitting him. The knife-wielding man, stunned, dropped the knife and fled, with the steak probably draped around his face or something.
Yeah, I bet you looked like an idiot going down a street with a steak around his throat.
The incident happened about 3 a.m. Friday at De Leon's Mexican Food on O Street there in Omaha. Two men had walked up to the restaurant drive-thru window and ordered drinks. When an employee opened the window to give them the drinks, one of the men grabbed the employee and threatened her with a knife. You got taken out with a flank steak, punk. World-famous Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rance, technical director Ralph Rodriguez. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. On-demand video of the show each and every day posted on our website. Till tonight, tomorrow morning, good night from El Pacifico.
Phil Henry.